Jeff Hutchison on 720 ABC Perth.
Very good morning to you. The technology surrounding kids nowadays is absolutely incredible. And it seems that children are in some kind of schooling younger and younger, but a kid's actually getting smarter. You're going to meet a gifted families coach who certainly seems to think that's the case. And my question to you this morning is it a pretty challenging one, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's one that will just be met with your ego saying, yes, that's me. Were you a really smart kid? Do you have really smart kids? And what are the challenges associated with that? I don't think for a minute that life is easier for someone who is really smart, because broadly, when we're in classrooms, we kind of conform to a certain kind of a standard. And does the smart kid stand out in ways that doesn't make life too easy for a smart kid? I don't think I've invited the audience to this program to show me how smart you are or to tell stories about what it was like to be smart you, but I'd love to know, what was it like to grow up really, really smart? The challenges, the benefits, because we assume there are so many benefits. We're going to meet a gifted families coach in just a moment who's going to take the argument a little bit further.
Have you been waiting for the Revelation Film Festival code word? Well, we're about to reveal it. The morning's Revelation code word is Congressman. Congressman. Jot down that code word and enter it online at abc.net.au/Perth and you could win a double pass to see Weena or Louis Theroux's My Scientology movie on Saturday, July 9th. Listen to Breakfast, Mornings, Afternoons, Drive and Saturday Breakfast all this week for more chances to win.
I am delighted that Jeff's Picture Show will be hosting both Weena and Louis Theroux's film about Scientology on July the 9th. I think Weena will be screening in the morning and the Scientology movie in the evening, and we'll be talking to the director of the Weena documentary on next week's Jeff's Picture Show. Martin Iglesias will be with us in about 30 minutes from now for Jeff's Picture Show today. If you've been helping your kids or grandkids with homework, you might have noticed that you're finding it harder to come up with the answers. What did you think? A Perth-based coach for gifted families reckons that kids around the world are getting smarter. And is that a good thing? Well, it's becoming very difficult for parents and teachers. They're finding it very hard to keep up. Alan Thompson joins me in the studio. Alan, good morning.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's your evidence to suggest that kids are getting smarter?
Look, there's quite a lot of evidence and there's quite a lot of research ongoing. Professor James Flynn, who you may have heard of, came up with the Flynn effect quite a while ago, and he found that we're getting 3 IQ points smarter every decade. So if we're comparing 2016 back to, say, the 1950s, we've had an explosion of IQ. What was once 100 IQ is now 120.
Now, you're the gifted children's coordinator at the High IQ Society Mensa. Tell us about your job. That must be extraordinary and very few people are qualified to do it.
It's a lot of fun there. There's a huge number of Mensans in Australia. Most of them actually per capita are right here in Perth in Western Australia, followed by Canberra, followed by Brisbane, then of course Melbourne and Sydney, the big capitals there. I support the parents and I support the families in helping support their own children, and we've got now state coordinators in most of the states that look after these families, give them events to come and sit down and do.
Okay, so what are some of the challenges that they face, and is finding the appropriately stimulating environment one of those challenges for these kids?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Environment's a big one. A lot of parents look to the schools to be able to support that environment, to be able to give them, you know, the right learning environment, the right things to look at. But really, we're looking at everything. We're looking at the whole breadth of information that they can be given. That includes things like play, music that they listen to, friends, like finding their own tribe. There's a real huge array of things that we look at.
Okay, so when you look at the kids who come to you, what defines them as being smart? What are some of the qualities you think that they have that says, yeah, this kid is sort of outstanding on this level? And then we'll talk about some of the challenges that those kids face.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question, because IQ and intelligence is not really something that you can define. I mean, there are checklists out there. Jerick, who's the Gifted Education Research Centre in New South Wales, came up with their own checklists, and so do some of the state education departments. And we can look at things like, is the child curious? Do they love learning? Do they go and look at numbers? Do they read the back of nutritional labels?
Were they early readers? Do you look at stuff like that?
Yeah,
so when
yeah.
a kid at two instinctively seems to be able to have this capacity to read, mm-hmm. Are they all sort of hallmarks of a greater, what do you say, a greater intellect?
Yeah, for sure. A higher IQ, absolutely. And there are measurements for that as well. When do they start talking, walking, reading, all of those things.
And when those families come to you with their kids, what are some of the issues they have? Is it, you know, he or she is really, really smart, but not getting the stimulation required in the school environment or being disruptive because of it? What are some of the consequences of being a smart kid?
Yeah, disruptive is a big one.
We see that
a lot. And not to take away from any sort of medically diagnosed conditions, there's things like ADHD and that sort of thing out there that a psychologist can diagnose. But sometimes it's really just self-inflicted boredom or shutting down in some cases. There's a family I've worked with in Canberra where their daughter just initially was talking about all kinds of things. At 4 years old, was able to list the Latin names for dinosaurs and could have full-on conversations. And when they put her into kindergarten over in the UK, she shut down. She started saying mama and dada, and she took away all these things that she was talking about, all these things that she was interested in, and hid herself so that she could fit in with the other kids.
Yeah. So we see that a lot, because there is that sort of standardized form of behavior in classroom environments where, you know, it's not necessarily by design, but no one wants to be or is seen to be particularly more remarkable or further behind than anyone else.
Absolutely, yeah. The tall poppy syndrome's huge in Australia, as you know.
Okay. Alan Thompson is my guest. He's the Gifted Children's Coordinator at Mensa. 1300 222 720. Don't be modest here. If you are smart, if you were the very clever kid, can you tell me what your school experience was like? And whether it has posed challenges for you as you have gone along. What does the smart kid need, Alan? What does the smart kid need?
A lot of things. I think being able to find their own tribe is a big one. Being able to find people, maybe mentors, perhaps coaches, certainly teachers and parents that will support them, that will give them what they're asking for. And that doesn't really mean what the parents think they should have or what the teachers think they should have. It's what that bright child is asking for. And sometimes they're asking for things that are unusual. Sometimes they're asking for resources that the parent or teacher are going, why do you want that?
Yeah.
Or are you ready for that?
Yeah.
So it's really good for them to feel listened to, for them to feel heard.
Now, as the parent of two perfectly smart but not super smart kids, I've not been in a position where I'm imagining that little creature sitting opposite me has powers of understanding and intellect that are growing at an enormous rate. Is it a bit, not scary is not the right word, but is it pretty tough on a parent because they look at kids and go, you know, I just don't know about your capacity to absorb all that you seem to know?
Sure. Yeah, the emotional capacity is a huge one as well. I've got a client at the moment in Queensland, a 7-year-old with really well-informed parents. And this 7-year-old is already doing year 12 and university level education, which, you know, you can imagine is quite frightening for the parents. Is he emotionally ready to yeah. move into that environment? Is he emotionally ready to be able to work with kids that are that older age?
And is that the very important question that is always being assessed? What is the emotional intelligence and readiness of this child? We know the capacity of the child is absolutely extraordinary, but what about their happiness, their coping, their friendship groups, their relationships with others?
That's right. And all of that social support, all of that needs to be taken into account. The research is really solid. We've got a professor, Professor Marika Gross, based here in Australia, who's been researching these super high IQ children since 1980s. And she has found that being able to push them through, being able to rapidly accelerate them is always a good thing. And that feedback is from teachers, parents and the children themselves. But there's also the consideration of how ready they are emotionally to be able to move forward into those different places, especially jumping into higher classrooms.
Okay, well, we've got some listeners who've got some questions for you. And I guess the one question I want to put to you before we get there is, I'm always interested when we hear the story of the sort of the prodigiously gifted as a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old or the 8-year-old that finds themselves studying at university level. Can we make any assessment of what their lives historically have been like when they have become adults? Does life get easier when you are the adult of the smart child?
Oh, that's a great question. That's really
are we not sure?
there is research. I just mentioned Professor Marika Gross, and she started a study called Exceptionally Gifted Children in 1989. She found 15 of the highest IQ children in Australia. We're talking about 0.03%. To put that in perspective, that's one person in Subiaco Oval, if that oval's full of average people. She found the one. She followed them all the way through their lives, and a few of them are still around in the media, people like Terence Tao and a few that have become Rhodes Scholars, that have been able to become confident adults because they were given the resources and the support that they needed as gifted children.
Really interesting, Alan Thompson, my guest, the Gifted Children's Coordinator for Mensa. Let's go to Mike. Mike, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Look, I was just listening to you and I was in the car with my wife and heard you talking about children and sort of trying to fit in with other children, and we have a 2-year-old daughter, and we looked at each other and like exactly her, and we're finding it. We don't really know what to do, and we're looking like if you've got any advice or where we can go to get. We've put her into that daycare a few days a week, and she's deteriorated. I mean, she was talking full-on conversations with us from the age of about 17 months. When she was 6 months old, she had a vocabulary of over 500 words.
No, it was about 11 months.
She had a vocabulary of 500 words. Like, and she seems to be going backwards. She knows all the letters, all the numbers, everything. She has massive conversations, but it's when we put her into daycare, she's gone backwards, and we're kind of like lost as to where we could like take her that's going to actually help her.
Yeah, Mike, keep listening. I mean, that's very counterintuitive, isn't it? But it makes that point that you made earlier, Alan, and that was you talked about someone who has got considerable gifts and then they go into environments and then retreat. So what do you do with a little kid that might already have a vocabulary, a really little kid, couple of years old, of 500 words? What path do we clear for that child?
And isn't that fantastic? And look, it might be from where I'm sitting, but I'm hearing this story more and more. And I would say that it's becoming more and more frequent, you know, whether it's based on the environment or the fact that they've got more access to devices. These kids are getting smarter at younger and younger ages, which I think is really exciting. Look, there's quite a lot you can do, and there's quite a lot of support in Australia. There really is. There are gifted support networks. There are local gifted organisations, but even at a local level, at a household level, there's resources that you can provide that the child is asking for. I'm talking about online resources, things like the Bill and Melinda Gates sponsored Khan Academy, where the child can go and learn at their own pace. Social groups that do include things like Australian Mensa and the associations that I mentioned, but being able to really listen and ask the right questions of these children is super important.
Mike, are you excited by the prospect of parenting this little girl?
Oh, completely. I get up every day and I look forward to it. I try not to be a friend to my child rather than a parent, but I mean, she's just like makes me so happy when she has full-on conversations with me and discovers things and yeah, I love learning. I've always loved learning. And I think I sort of got that from my parents, and I think I passed it on to her, and she just explodes with happiness every time she discovers something, and she's doing it all the time.
Wow, that is extraordinary. From your point of view, Alan, it has to be steered and nurtured because the future is not always that great for someone who is perhaps so far above others when it comes to their intellect.
For sure, it can be challenging, for sure. We talked about recently about the idea of this being essentially like a disability. If you're looking at the bottom 2%, they get treatment far and above what the top 2% get. They get the kind of physical and mental treatment and support that doesn't seem to really exist for this other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So being able to provide that in any way, and that's from as simple as listening to them all the way through to giving them appropriate education, learning environments, looking at what their values are, what's important to them, focusing on what their strengths and talents are, all these are going to make for a healthier child and a more confident adult as they grow.
Tim writes, Jeff is a really smart kid at school. I never had to work very hard to succeed. I have very poor perseverance now, which I'm struggling to develop. Is that something that you hear as well? When it comes easy, that there's a point in later life where maybe you don't have a resilience that is required?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing a lot of work on persistence because it's a huge one. We talk about the idea of inspiration plus perspiration, right? Yeah. Well, gifted children, particularly these really highly gifted children, at young ages, everything is super easy for them. They look at what should be their grade level, chronological level work, and they can solve it instantly, almost intuitively. They've got extra cognitive abilities that lets them look at a maths problem and be able to do it inside their head while the other kids are working it out with pencil and paper. So looking at not praising so much, or not praising the output as much as the effort, is a really good idea, as well as just supporting that idea, that concept of having persistence right the way through the life.
Okay, let's go to Ken and then we'll go to Brendan. Ken, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I was just thinking, I had the 1972 Guinness Book of Records, and in that they said that the highest IQ back then was actually was a South Korean who had an IQ of 216. But the other thing that was interesting, because they always had the highest, was it the record for the Brits as well, and said that the highest British was around about 185, 186, and the fact that he was working as a hotel porter. So this is the thing that struck me too, was having a very high IQ doesn't guarantee a successful life. And it was the same thing, was that I had a young, when I was in the Air Force, one of my course mates, when I was doing a photography course, I actually commented, how on earth did someone as dumb as him get onto the photography course? And it was pointed out to me that he actually had the third highest IQ in the Air Force.
Thank you very much for that, Ken. Brendan, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. My interest is, I have a seven-year-old son who we're getting tested very soon for gifted and talented abilities. My interest is asynchronous development is something we've heard. Is that, may you comment on that? He seems to be good at reading and maths, but there are other areas which he could work a bit more on.
Alan.
Yeah, for sure. Isn't that a great keyword, asynchronous development?
Yeah, what does it mean?
Well, I think some of these gifted researchers like to put in big words to sound smart, but essentially we're saying that they're going at different speeds for different things. And that's a great example, reading versus maths, or even the emotional development comes into it. And it's to be expected. If you've got a seven-year-old chronologically who's working at a 16-year-old or 17-year-old level, there's going to be some differences there. They're brain is mapped out to be able to follow logic and process, and maybe sometimes a little bit behind emotionally. Not always, though.
What's the challenge as you see it, Brendan, with a kid that is particularly clever?
Exactly as mentioned by Alan, is socially he seems to be very emotional, and understanding those emotions are a big challenge. Being sometimes a typical male, you have to communicate things in a better way and makes you look at yourself. It's almost like a little mirror. And that's the challenge, it's more on you as a parent to make sure that you're doing everything you can and look at yourself and be the best that you can be.
Brendan, thank you very much. Hello, Jeff and Alan. I might be wrong, but I would have thought that most very bright children have equally smart parents who usually recognise their offspring are clever at a very early age, and who, because they're also quite clever, are well equipped to engage their minds and guide them socially. Well, first up, does a very smart child by definition have very smart parents?
It's all in the family, Jeff. Absolutely, yeah. So Dr. Linda Silverman over in the US found that parents and even grandparents are within 10 IQ points of their child. So we're saying right across that family, we're going to have very, very similar levels of smarts.
Okay. I know there's some very bright children who struggle socially, but social skills can also be taught. I'm very lucky to have two extremely bright daughters, both exceptionally high achievers and are married to another exceptionally bright person. It is a challenge for clever girls in particular, and brackets, it's worse for pretty blonde ones because of outdated stereotypes, to fit in with the social strata, but there's a lot of support out there. Single-sex schools are really valuable for super bright girls, says Marty. Let's go to Rebecca. Rebecca, hello.
Hi. Hi. I've got a 10-year-old little boy who is in year four, and he has been assessed as being gifted. We've always had social issues, as you're talking. He was more of a, in primary school, he was too advanced with his vocabulary to interact with the other kids. He's met a couple of kids in his classroom that were the same sort of interactions as he and interests as he has, but they've since left the school. And I found that at recess and lunch, he's just happier to go off by himself and play. He's saying he's bored in class because he knows all his answers. But my biggest issue that I have with the teachers is that because he's bored, he's not putting 100% in, and so he's not getting the A's and the higher achieving scores. He's getting a B and he's very happy, and they know that he's talented. But because he's bored, he's just not putting the extra effort into it. And I was just wondering what you would recommend in that sort of environment.
It's a very familiar sounding story, Alan, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very common one, for sure. Let's cover the social aspect first. I don't really have an issue with gifted families or gifted children being able to spend time alone, because their advanced brain is going to mean that they're going to want to process things themselves. Obviously, it's beneficial to have that support for people that are on their wavelength, or even children that aren't on their wavelength. One of my clients talks about having smart friends for her child and also street smart friends,
yeah,
so that they're learning this full life.
Hey, Rebecca, a question for you. Do you consider your son gifted? Do you have any difficulty saying the word gifted?
In my family, no,
yeah,
but I find it very difficult to talk to other families just in the normal school and then say, oh, it almost makes you think, oh, you know, am I being pretentious to say that my child is this? So
yeah,
in a professional side of, when I'm talking with the teachers and I have the evidence to back up what I'm saying, then that's fine. I find that quite comfortable. But as far as just a normal mum out there,
just being casual, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason I asked is that Lisa contacted us to say that some teachers are rather insulted when you tell them your child is bored and unchallenged and roll their eyes when you mention the gifted word. It is pretty hard to get the support you need.
I think with him is, I mean, I'm a teacher as well, so I've actually had parents come to me and I have probably rolled my eyes more than once thinking, okay, well, you know, maybe, but, you know, maybe you're just seeing more than what, you know, you're demonstrating. But in this situation, as I said, I have got the evidence to back that up, and the teachers are quite supportive. It's almost like they don't know what to do. And I've only just recently sent an email to the teachers saying, is it possible to create some sort of, you go to a private school, but is there something I can create for like a PAC type term activity that once he finishes his work that he can move on to that, just to get some more excitement, because what he's doing and learning, or he's not learning, and he's as far as he's like, I already know the answers, Mum, and he does. It's not like he's making it up kind of thing. So, and he's just, because of that, it's boring for him, and he's not then putting 100% effort into it, because he can just put the answer down and he knows it's right, but there's no incentive for him to put that extra amount of detail into this story or all of that sort of thing. So he's,
Well, I tell you what, Rebecca, thank you very much for your call. Alan, I'm getting a sense that there are plenty of smart kids in this state and very familiar stories. Can I finish with one, which is just a great question? How do I know if my child is really smart or if it's just compared to me that I think he's smart? Because we might get that, where someone who's not the cleverest looks at a child who's slightly cleverer and goes, he is a genius. Mm-hmm. How do we know?
That's a difficult one. You can certainly look at some of the checklists and indicators that we talked about: curiosity, a great sense of humour, early reading, the basic academic, very high levels of academic achievement. All of those are pretty visible. If you've got a super, super bright child, you're going to know about it. You are. And the next step then is to take them through to a psychologist and get them tested, get that IQ testing done so that you've got a number and so that you know what you're working with.
Okay. Good to talk to you today. Alan Thompson, the Gifted Children's Coordinator for the IQ Society Mensa. Thank you very much for your time indeed. And folks, thank you for your observations and calls and questions. We're going to put that interview up on SoundCloud so you can have a listen and pass it around to other parents and grandparents of clever kids. And I'm perfectly happy to hear from you before we get to 11 o'clock if you genuinely want to come up and say, I am really clever.